You are listening to Free Radio Olympia. Here at the Thunderbolt, I tend to cover a lot of controversial topics from controversial points of view. And therefore, some of the other folks that work with this radio station always appreciate it when I point out that while they may agree with the views expressed on this program, they also very well may not. And in either case, they are in no way responsible for that content. Therefore, if my show makes you want to start hurling blunt objects at people, then make sure you choose the correct target, which in this case would be me, not them. And now, on with the show! Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Hello and welcome to the Thunderbolt for September 16th, 2022. I'm going to replay the very first nomination for the Thunderbolt's official Most Evil Persons in History Award this week, which originally aired back in 2014 and which centers upon Edward Bernays, one of the most infamous men you've likely never heard of. So let's get on with it.
We are molded. Our minds are governed, our tastes are formed, and our ideas are suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. Edward Bernays. It is an interesting mind exercise to comb our history and try to determine which single human has caused the most evil and which human has caused the most good. Ironically, I think that Jesus Christ could make a credible claim to both titles. Unfortunately, many more names come to mind much more easily when considering the evil side of the ledger than when considering the good side. And this is even though, in my personal experience, good people vastly outnumber evil people. It's just that evil people's footprint is so often so large that they receive a highly disproportionate level of attention. Yes, Hitler, Stalin, Justin Bieber. Evil personified does not lack personages fully capable of adequately performing said personification. But here is a name that probably doesn't immediately jump to most people's list, even though it is a name that I maintain could probably challenge nearly anyone. Edward Louis Bernays. Yes, Edward Bernays is the quotee that I quoted at the beginning of this bit. And Mr. Bernays is exactly the man that he himself describes in the quote. Mr. Bernays is the man we have never heard of who manipulates our minds, our tastes, and our ideas. Mr. Bernays literally wrote the book on propaganda. His book is called Propaganda. Mr. Bernays called propaganda the executive branch of the secret government. Now, Mr. Bernays is so non-famous that Microsoft Word just placed a red squiggle under his name to indicate a perceived misspelling. Now, this non-fame is in spite of the fact that Mr. Bernays is credited by many with being the progenitor of the modern public relations machine. Now, that sounds pretty innocuous until you consider the uses to which public relations is being used these days. And those uses were exactly what Mr. Bernays had in mind as he originated them. Mr. Bernays was an ideological plutocrat. Yes, his understanding was that the masses needed to be closely controlled because they were incapable of controlling themselves. He constantly referred to us as the bewildered herd engaging in group thought. Now, I don't know how he knew all of this, since as far as I know, common people have never been allowed to just run their own affairs without a bunch of plutocrats' feet on their necks. But I don't think the factual accuracy was very high on Mr. Bernays' list of priorities. He was, in fact, an enthusiastic promoter of propaganda designed to further the advantages of the elite few who ran the world by right of their superiority. And while the truth was optimal when appropriate, a lie was completely appropriate when the truth was not. Now, like so many of his other assertions, the superiority of this elite has never been empirically demonstrated. While the Europeans have for several centuries now indeed been able to kick everyone else's ass due to superior weaponry and due to superior ruthlessness, many would not consider the ability to kill large numbers of people in an incredibly ruthless manner to be indicative of a superior race of beings. Anyway, Mr. Bernays' work was aimed at convincing people to need things rather than to simply want them. But that was only part of a much larger strategy, for during this process, Mr. Bernays not only sought to link their unconscious desires to the consumption of mass-produced goods, but in turn, these desires could then be used to control the masses by keeping them distracted on frivolous BS so that they wouldn't care about or question whatever nastiness the machine was up to at any given time. Now, this concept was actually first practiced by the Romans, as far as I know. They called it bread and circus. As long as the people are fed and entertained, they won't care about what you do in the shadows. Now, for someone you probably never heard of, Mr. Bernays' actual real-world accomplishments were truly extraordinary. Now, you may remember that I have mentioned several times now in the Thunderbolt that the machine spent big bucks right after World War I on studies of how to manipulate public perception. Well, Mr. Bernays was the bottom liner for many, if not most, of these studies. Mr. Bernays was, in fact, the first man to actually apply scientific methodology to the manipulation of public perception. Now, Mr. Bernays first earned his props by convincing the American public to support an American intervention into World War I. Now, this was a hard sell because Woodrow Wilson had just won re-election on the slogan that he kept us out of the war. And the public had absolutely no desire to get caught up in Europe's insanity, and they fully expected Mr. Wilson to continue keeping us out of the war. Wilson, though, had fully intended to become fully involved the whole time, and as soon as he was re-elected, he hired Edward Bernays to help sell the war to the public. And in an astonishingly short period of time, Mr. Bernays, almost single-handedly, completely turned the public's perception of the war around. So I have written recently upon how World War I was 10 times more significant than World War II, and that the disaster represented by World War I and the numerous disasters that resulted from World War I are completely unappreciated by the modern American public. World War I ushered in the birth of the modern war machine, the modern propaganda machine, the modern security state, big government. And by the time the United States belatedly jumped into the fray, the war was pretty much at a stalemate. Everyone was sick of it and would very likely have ended soon in a negotiated settlement. But the entry of the United States completely changed the entire dynamic. The war blew up again and went on for several years longer than necessary because of the American involvement. And thus, for Edward Bernays' involvement in involving the United States in World War I alone, I believe that he deserves a special place in hell. But this was just the first of numerous successful campaigns by Mr. Bernays in a very long and very prolific and very horrific career. To sell World War I, Mr. Bernays proposed the idea that the intervention was needed in order to bring democracy to Europe. Yes, he proposed this over and over and over again, all over, everywhere, all the time, repeatedly, everywhere that everyone was. And even though it was total BS, it not only worked quite well, but in fact, the spectacular success of his campaign blew even Mr. Bernays' own mind. And he knew he was onto something big here. Yes, the World War I campaign was what convinced Mr. Bernays that people must be appealed to through emotion rather than through logic or facts. Mr. Bernays was an enthusiastic student of his uncle, Sigmund Freud, and he forever after became an enthusiastic promoter of regimenting the masses without their knowing it, and doing that by manipulating their subconscious desires. After World War I, Mr. Bernays went to work merging psychology and other social sciences with the art of propaganda. Yes, and he moved on from advising the government to advising private enterprise. Among Mr. Bernays' clients were Procter & Gamble, CBS, the United Fruit Company, the American Tobacco Company, General Electric, Dodge Motors. Mr. Bernays was even the single most effective promoter for the fluoridation of public water systems.
Speed along the highway, honey, I want it my way. But listen to her daddy's song. Don't stay out too long. Ooh, we're just busy hiding, sitting in the back seat of my car.
So here is just a partial list of Mr. Bernays' accomplishments. He spearheaded a highly successful push to get women to start smoking cigarettes in the 1920s. He labeled it as a women's rights issue. He labeled cigarettes as torches of freedom. He was also the man who convinced many industries that the news, and not advertising, was the best medium to carry their message to the unsuspecting public. Mr. Bernays was even responsible for the public's belief that Thomas Edison invented the light bulb, when actually it was invented by a man that no one has ever heard of named Joseph Swan. Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels used Mr. Bernays' book, Crystallizing Public Opinion, whilst implementing the Holocaust.
When we finish driving, we can say we were late in arriving and listen to
So Mr. Bernays also taught that people who are living in fear will blindly accept authority and thus must be kept ever fearful. And in that spirit, Mr. Bernays became one of the central architects of the Cold War. Mr. Bernays exacerbated the public's fear of communism in order to spur them into action rather than trying to assuage them with the actual fact that communism had never actually posed much, if any, threat to the United States. One of the first sinister applications of the anti-communist tactic came in 1954 when Mr. Bernays convinced the American public to accept an American-backed coup against the popular and democratically elected government of Jacobo Arbenz in Guatemala. And they did this by convincing them that Mr. Arbenz was a communist. This was all done for the benefit of Mr. Bernays' client, the United Fruit Company, now known as the Chiquita brand. It was done because Mr. Arbenz was trying to force United Fruit to treat Guatemalan workers in a humane manner, rather than brutally exploiting them in slave-like conditions. But the new military dictatorship not only abandoned Mr. Arbenz's policies on United Fruit, but they instead began assisting United Fruit in brutally exploiting their workers in slave-like conditions. Yes, the United Fruit Company's ruthless domination of Central America throughout the mid to late 20th century, with the regular assistance of the United States military, United Fruit was responsible for the invention of the term Banana Republic. Mr. Bernays taught that the first reaction of most people when something happens is to follow their herd instinct. Said instinct being to seek some sort of leader to tell them what they should think about this new thing. He taught that while individuals have minds, the herd has only impulses, and Mr. Bernays took full advantage of this tendency. Mr. Bernays knew that you could manipulate people into acting irrationally by appealing to their emotions and taking advantage of their need for a herd leader. Now, on the commercial level, Mr. Bernays was the master of converting wants into needs. He was a genius at taking frivolous or irrelevant things and converting them into powerful symbols for something else. Mr. Bernays taught that you must establish an emotional connection between the consumer and the product. Rather than purchasing a car because you need a car for transportation, Mr. Bernays convinced people to purchase a Dodge because purchasing a Dodge would make them feel better. Plus, purchasing a Dodge conferred status. Purchasing a Dodge conferred sexual appeal. Rather than manufacturers begging customers to purchase their product, under Mr. Bernays' tutelage, customers were soon begging manufacturers to sell them their product. For instance, when Mr. Bernays took on the pork industry as a client, he convinced the American public to start eating bacon and eggs, not because they tasted good, or because they were cheap, or because they were nutritious, or anything practical. Instead, Mr. Bernays convinced a bunch of doctors to tell them how great bacon and eggs were. American doctors were nearly demigods to the American public at the time, and that was all it took. Bacon and eggs soon became the all-American breakfast. And the tobacco industry later used this very same trick. When I was a child, there were doctors on television telling people how healthy it was to smoke cigarettes. Now, Mr. Bernays labeled his scientific technique of opinion molding as the engineering of consent. Now, as to nominating Mr. Bernays for the Thunderbolt Most Evil Human of All Time award, that could actually be problematic. In reading Mr. Bernays' book, Crystallizing Public Opinion, I ran into exactly the same paradox as when I read Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler. Like Mr. Hitler, Mr. Bernays was a genius, and he knew that he was a genius, and he was utterly convinced that he was helping to save humanity from itself. Mr. Bernays was convinced that the herd human was completely irrational and that the herd human always needed the guiding hand provided by our superior elites. Like Hitler, Bernays was convinced, as only a fanatic can be convinced, that he was the savior of humanity, and I think that both men honestly believed this, which is what made them both so dangerous. So is Mr. Bernays evil if his motivation was pure? Are we going to condemn him for manipulating people's perceptions? If so, you're going to have to condemn me too, because I also have studied these same studies and I regularly employ many of the same tricks. And I am doing what I do to sway people toward a certain point of view. I am convinced I am doing this for the good of humanity. But that leads us right back to Mr. Bernays and to Mr. Hitler. As for determining which of us is right and which of us is wrong, the fact is that Mr. Bernays is much more educated than I am, and from reading his book, I know that he was also a lot smarter than I am, and all of the things can also be said about Mr. Hitler, except possibly about him being more educated, as he didn't have much education. And as for the underlying assumptions of the right and the left, the right feels that people are evil and need to be constrained, while the left feels that people are good overall and that we can get along just fine if we are allowed to. Now, I suspect there is some serious projection going on amongst the right-wingers here. I suspect that their contention may actually be true within the social circles that they inhabit. I maintain it's not true, though, in the social circles where I tend to dwell. And I think that my circles are larger and growing faster than their circles. As for all that education and intelligence possessed by Mr. Bernays, I will end this bit with this observation. People should never confuse knowledge with wisdom. Knowledge just knows things. Wisdom knows what to do with those things. Wisdom without knowledge often works just fine, while knowledge without wisdom can be the most dangerous thing in the world. And so in that context, I will now tell you the difference between myself and Mr. Bernays and Mr. Hitler. They never question themselves. I always question myself. And now, it is time to take a quick station break. The Thunderbolt will return in just a moment. Yippee! The views expressed on the Thunderbolt are my views, and no one else's. Those views do not necessarily reflect the views of any of the stations that air the Thunderbolt, nor anybody that has anything to do with any of those stations. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. Hello, kids. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for July 18th, 2014. You know, I spent the vast majority of my adult life almost constantly traveling all over North America. And I've got to say that of all the places I have ever been, that the state of Texas has to be my very favorite place in the whole world to not be. And so this week, I am going to hurl my first thunderbolt at my favorite place to not be.
I have this fear that my luck is none too good. This sword here at my side don't act the way it should. Keeps calling me its master, but I feel like its slave. Hauling me faster and faster to an early, early grave.
A few too many black blades in the state of Texas.
I'm told it's my duty to fight against the law. That wizardry is my trade, and I was born to wait to go. I just want to be a lover, not a red-eyed screaming ghoul. I wish it picked another to be its killing tool.
So, kids, Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, has refused to sign on to Obamacare, even though the vets paid for nearly all of it for a very long time. Rick Perry doesn't believe in spending a penny of public funds on health care for individuals. However, Governor Perry is backing state funding for gay conversion therapy. He also compared being gay to being an alcoholic. He said that even if it is wired into your brain, that you can be an alcoholic who refuses to drink. And the same for being gay. Wow. Let's pause on that one for a second. Alcohol is a thoroughly deadly and highly addictive drug that induces violence, wrecks families, destroys lives, and is directly responsible for tens of thousands of deaths every year. Alcohol abuse causes serious damage to literally every organ in your body except your inner ear. Withdrawing from alcohol addiction often kills people. And those it doesn't kill often wish that it would. Alcohol devastates our culture, and no other single causative factor is so closely linked with violence in our society. As far as I know, the only social cost that being gay causes is that it brings discomfort to homophobes.
It's death from the beginning to the end of time. And I'm the cosmic champion, and I hold a mystic sign, and the whole world's dying, and the burden's mine, and the black soul keeps on killing till the end of time.
And wielding another black blade, Senator James Inhofe has accused Barack Obama of attempting to force Americans to live out the president's green dream. Well, let's pause again on that one. That is just bizarre. The only green dream that I can imagine connected in any way to Barack Obama would be if someone took Jon Stewart's advice and started growing in Obama's Green Dream strain for the new pot stores. It should be one of those downer-type indica strains that first makes you stupid and then puts you to sleep. Myself, I'm a fan of a sativa speed weed strains, which have the opposite effect. And speaking of bizarre, Dick Cheney is criticizing Barack Obama's conduct of the Iraq occupation. Well, let's pause again on that one. So is this clueless chutzpah or utter profound cosmic total absolute tone deafness? And speaking of bizarre, in relation to Dick Cheney, did you know that Dick Cheney literally does not have a heart? This is absolutely true. His heart was replaced with a pump a few years ago. This means that Dick Cheney literally no longer has a heartbeat. Dick Cheney literally no longer has a pulse.
He was
this happened, I couldn't have ever imagined in 1,000 years anything that would ever in 1,000,000 years be able to make Dick Cheney even creepier than he already was. As far as I can tell, Cheney is functioning completely normally without his heart. But I don't think he actually used it all that much, even when he had one. Did you know that oil was the major factor behind both World Wars I and II? Franz Ferdinand was a pretext. World War I started for many reasons, but the central reason was that the British were totally freaked out about a German plan to construct a Berlin to Baghdad railway to transport Middle Eastern oil to Germany and German soldiers to Baghdad if necessary. After World War I, Iraq was the biggest spoil of all. Shortly after this, John D. Rockefeller originally established relations with the Saudi royal family. Week I mentioned that prior to the American invasion, Iraq had several top-notch universities. Well, those are the remnants of a program wherein John D. Rockefeller established numerous universities throughout the Middle East. He considered this to be the second most important investment that Standard Oil could make. Now, these universities were specifically designed to win local hearts and minds, and they did just that. The oppressive British colonial system of direct political control, the Americans instead controlled certain locals who would do their dirty work for them. Thus, while the Americans were still calling the shots, it appeared as if the locals were running the show. Educating an elite class amongst the locals was necessary to implementing such a system of indirect control. Yeah, we'll just hire some bounty hunters to run that country for us. How did all of our oil get under their sand anyway? Good question. So that's it for the news and commentary section this week. I'm going to fill out the rest of the hour with some music. I like music that's both weird and good, and this week's selection fits both of those bills. This is Ego Plum and the Ebola Music Orchestra. Enjoy. Oh.
All right. From Ego Plum and the Ebola Music Orchestra. That was The Return of Cannibal Chimp. Before that, we had La Besta de Carga. Preceding that, we had The Idiot Child. Before that, we had Mambo Madness. And we started off with the Ebola Music Orchestra theme. So I would like to add at this time that if you're liking what you hear here, you may want to kick some money to this radio station. They will put it to very good use. So that's it for this week. I hope to see you next week. Before we go, though, please keep in mind the views expressed on the Thunderbolt are those of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station or anyone associated with this radio station. The Thunderbolt website is dana98501.wordpress.com. 98501 is the downtown Olympia zip code, if that helps you remember that. And you can contribute to the Thunderbolt cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. Glad you joined us this week. We hope to see you next week. And in the meanwhile,
thank you very much.